Thank you, everyone. Does this volume sound good to people? Okay. Steve, okay. So if we're at Zendable right now, and I just finished the Dharma Talks, so you already speak, we would chant the following chant, first in Japanese, then in English. So it goes, Shujo Muhen Seigando. Bono Mujin Seigandam, Homon Muryo Seigandaku, Busodo Mujo Seiganjo. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unstressful, I vow to commit.
Ellen, your voice is breaking up a little bit. Maybe sit closer to your microphone.
Okay. The first time I chanted these lines were about 12 years ago, and I was just completely fascinated. They were, for me at the time, my own version of the perception of Zen was mystical, undefinable, magical even. And over the years, since my perception changed, as I delved into the practicalities of practice, sitting, forms, Dokusan, practice conversations with my teachers, reading and listening. Yet today, I'm still really fascinated by what are all the books we talked about, so I just suggested. In April 2013, as Carl said, I received lay ordination called Jukai, where I accepted and acknowledged Bodhisattva precepts as an unknown half for myself. That day, I received my Dharma name of Shinki Buzan, profound capacity. My life changed. Never before.
Ellen, yes. We're still having trouble hearing you. So
okay, let me do this.
Hey, Alan, you could maybe also just turn off your video.
Okay, does this sound better?
Yeah, we'll see. If this doesn't sound better, maybe you should turn off your video because it'll, okay. You know, it might be the Wi-Fi.
Okay, let's try this. So my life changed. Never before had I consciously done anything like that in front of my teacher, my friends, students. I committed to life according to Buddhist principles. The process leading to Jukai at San Francisco Zen Center has many steps of study, discussion with a teacher on the precepts, practice with the precepts, more discussion, sewing the rakusu, which is this little bib I'm wearing, unsewing all the mistakes I made in it, sewing it again, and relying on guidance of those more experienced and everything above, and then living with my own instincts. On the day of Jukai, the question was, why after years of pushing away all sorts of possible involvements, I was joining, and the word I came to my mind was cult, and not in a good way. As we chanted through the building, bowing at altars before we entered the Buddha Hall for the ceremony, I told myself to run before it's too late. It's time to get away. And that very thought was still in my mind when I and vanished the moment I stepped across the threshold of the Buddha Hall. Every morning when I sit on my intentions, and for many years, one of has been, my intention is to awaken with all beings, another way of saying saving all beings. I want to acknowledge that parts of my talk today have been inspired by Shimako Okamura's living
Alan,
by-
Alan?
Yeah.
You're still kind of breaking up a little bit.
Okay.
Let's try maybe if you turn off click stop video and we'll see if that helps. Thank you so much.
Okay, sure. So parts of today's talk have been inspired by Shiwaku Okamura's book, Living My Vow, which looks deeply at what he calls the eight essentials in Tantan text. First vows that you examine are the four Bodhisattva vows that I just mentioned. I honestly love the idea of saving all the beings. I would say who doesn't, but I realize that this is my way, not everyone's way. A good part of my life has been geared towards saving all beings. my professional career, my activism, my openness to friends and family. And it took a time, maybe 40 or 50 years, to get myself to consider saving myself. Saving all beings was my codependency. As long as I was busy saving all beings, I didn't have to look at myself, my problems, my issues, my long-term karma from my family history, from my cultural history, from my being a white person in a racist society, from my being a racist in a racist society. When spiritual practice by something they find lacking in their souls. Quickly enough, the ideas of reading the classes can hold us to keep satisfied. And I think, oh, I'm making progress. I pat myself on the back. But then, by themselves, these actions only activate the mind and create a new distance from our original intent. Frustrated, I would ask, how is this helping me? How is this helping my personal problems to be fixed? Eventually, I hit the metaphoric wall of realization, and believe me, Zen has lots of these walls everywhere, and that Zen is not about fixing me. Zen allows me a practice, a portal to look at reality, and with this realization, one jumps back to the larger view, the greater view. Zen is not an intellectual activity, despite the long tradition of scholarship and writing. It is a body practice. That is why we focus on sitting and observing the world with our body and feelings. As far as I have experienced, this cycle of questioning oneself and one's actions and recommitting repeats over and over, each time coming back to the body. One of the early and continuous lessons from Zen is we are already enlightened, we just don't know it. In David Chadwick's book, To Shine One Corner of the World, he reports Suzuki Roshi wryly saying it another way, each of you is perfect the way you are, and you can use a little improvement. I accept this as a truth. I accept that imperfections, mistakes, wrong paths, uncertainty, pain are just as much of understanding, acceptance, and perfection as our peace, happiness, equanimity, and the right path. Nothing we see or hear is perfect, but right there in imperfection is perfect reality. Suzuki Roshi said in Not Only So, his other book. Throughout these twists and turns of my Zen experience, I kept on returning to the four vows. I'd like to share you my understanding and experience of the four vows today. My caveat is that I'm not an expert and approach my topic with a beginner's mind. I can only offer you one person's incomplete version of reality that surrounds us that I have today. According to Okamura, a bodhisattva is a person who lives by vow instead of by karma. And he describes karma as habits, preferences, and ready-made systems of values. I'll be honest, I'm not the best Zen student or Buddhist. I take shortcuts whenever possible. And honestly, I like to believe that those shortcuts are justifiable and good by themselves. So I'll then say, if I'm enlightened and living by vow, I must be a bodhisattva, or at least on that path. Now, Zen is super hierarchical, so I always thought there must be an official test for being a bodhisattva. And maybe it is as simple as saying, person, man, woman, camera, TV. I don't really know. Okamura says, though, a bodhisattva is defined by their commitment to the vows. Constant repetition of the vows settles them in the body. Even if you don't know Japanese, the sounds of the words alone begin to work their way through your mind to the body where they live and flourish. Start with the vows, repeat them without expectation, let them sink in. So let's look at the vows. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. As Zen teacher Mark Lesser points out, beings are numberless. There are no beings. There really are no beings. He wasn't kidding. If all beings are interconnected, then what we imagine as ourselves disappears. At the same time, our personal self does not disappear. Both all exist simultaneously. Together, we are all staring at a computer, and Zoom demonstrates our connectedness and individuality. If you're on gallery view, you can see the pulse beat of our humanity together. when we're all unmuted, and occasionally you will notice individual lights, boxes spontaneous light up, even when someone else is speaking. We may be listening to the speaker, and at the same time, we are connecting with everyone we can see on the screen. The lighted boxes flip around as people move, sigh, and make a remark. If you flip to speaker view, well, actually today, obviously, if you flip to speaker view, you'll just see Alan Lessig, he, not even him, you know, on your screen. But you would see this at speaker view, the speaker's commanding attention, like we are when I am thinking just about me or I. We are the center of attention, but the speaker mode does not eliminate the other boxes. The speaker is not alone. Our challenge is to accept and live with the interconnected beings of the ultimate reality and the individual being that has a body that experiences conventional reality. No single being can be saved by themselves, just as all beings interconnected cannot save themselves. I can easily imagine saving people in the Sangha in front of me here, but what about all those other people? The difficult family members, the person at work who's abrasive, annoying, people who don't wear masks when they should, acquaintances that post right-wing memes on Facebook, people who threaten or carry out violence, people who don't practice Buddhism. For numberless beings, I seem to have a large and growing list of people who I believe I cannot save, or maybe in my heart of hearts, don't want to save. We will get to delusions next, but as a preview of that topic, the list of people I just mentioned who I don't want to save or don't think I can save is really just a list of delusions and not people. If there are no beings, then how can there be these beings I can't cope with, I do not want to deal with, and blame for not wanting to be saved? I can only turn to myself. What parts of me in our interbeing do I not want to sit with? What parts of me interbeing need a little improvement in my perfection? How am I abrasive? How do I threaten, hold fixed views, don't want to get along with family members and others, don't want to acknowledge other ways of living except for my own and a select few others? In a paraphrase of Senju Earthwind Manuel in her Way of Tenderness, a bodhisattva has to practice with the limitations of her own perceptions of the mental, spiritual state of her family, society, and beingness. Right now, an important question for me is how my fixed views as a white person skew my interactions with our reality. What am I bringing to saving all beings from a point of whiteness? I believe, and whether this is true or not, that I've pondered this from my identities of a gay cis male from a working class background. Yet those ponderings may inform my, my view of whiteness, yet in this moment, I'm coming to greater awareness of how my whiteness limits my worldview is part of my own process of awakening. Many of us are used to either or viewpoints and mentality. For me, it's easy to get fixed on what is right or wrong. And I believe my versions of right or wrong. And if pushed, I can find people and theories to back me up on them. So while ethics and morals are not intrinsically bad, using them as a moral battering ram can be. Saving all beings means engaging with those we might choose not to, and engaging in ways that may not be comfortable. Saving all beings means engaging with those parts of myself that I am not familiar with, I don't want to be familiar with, I want to push away. As several teachers have pointed out, sometimes saving all beings is simply doing less harm. Or as another Zen teacher, Valerie Beer, once said, my job is to save all beings from my own stupidity. Which leads us to delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. We are certainly experiencing this statement of reality every day. Corona seems to be inexhaustible, but that is not enough. Racism seems to be inexhaustible, but that is not enough. Violence in all forms and manifestations is inexhaustible, and that is not enough. Unemployment and poverty appear to be inexhaustible, but they are not enough. Environmental degradation is certainly inexhaustible, and that is not enough. I can add to this litany all of my personal delusions and all the ones I don't even know about. Another way to state delusions are inexhaustible is we cannot even have enough delusions to satisfy our desire for delusions. A fundamental truth recognized by Buddha, Our humanness is defined by our struggle with delusions, especially the basic one of not recognizing our own interbeing. And perhaps the biggest delusion is that delusions are inexhaustible. What? We know from our experiences that delusions can be exhaustible. They can disappear in a puff of smoke, in a moment of stillness, in a flash of awareness. Keeping them exhausted is a whole other matter. By acknowledging our ability to acknowledge our delusions, big and small, we have a place to act from, a way to experience life directly without filters. Yes, they won't end, which is why Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. You may have noticed that the vows never use the word but. The first part of the phrase of each vow offers a vision of reality that appears to be part of reality, yet when you look at it, encompasses all of reality. The second phrase doesn't negate the first one the way the word but would. The second phrase gives us an action to follow our vow. So sure, there are a million bazillion ways, which is the modern version of the Buddhist 100,000 million kalpas, to enter the Dharma, and we can still enter them. Now, is it a delusion that we need all these entry points? With a million bazillion beings, aren't all those entry points occupied? And more importantly, honestly, who needs so many Dharma gates? Don't we just need one? Will it not lead us to where each part of us needs to go? Just as there is no end gate that says you have achieved it all, there's no beginning gate. There's just gate after gate after gates among gates, reminding us of our vow and our delusions. I have a Facebook acquaintance from my figure skating world who has worldviews that I do not subscribe to. She recently posted a video meme debunking the coronavirus. I was furious when I read that. And this was 15 minutes before I was going into a Sangha meeting. I had to notice the use of the word had. Anytime that happens, it's a good thing for me to ask, do I really have to? But I had to respond. And so I wrote, if you can't believe that the virus is dangerous, I don't know what to say. I'm saddened to think that you feel a need to share nonsensical propaganda. Please take me off your mailing list. I hope you remain happy. Really quickly, she responded, where'd you get the idea that I don't think it's serious? I do. I just look at all the information that I can find. Because I was going to my Sangha meeting, my quick response, I pay attention to public health officials. The rest is not information. This video falls in that category. If one believes in the seriousness of this pandemic, then that person encourages their friends to how to best support themselves and survive this disease. Now, I thought that was a pretty measured response. I didn't attack her as a person. I tried to skillfully communicate with her. Despite that, I went into my Sangha meeting furious, ready to cut her off, drop her friendship. I was caught up in my anger. And for the entire time of the sitting in the first half an hour, that's all I could deal with was my anger with her. And I even thought at one time, how dare she break my bodhisattva vow? Now, a little aside is when you make statements like that in your mind, it's a good sign, at least for me, to stop and examine what the really amazing capacity I have for absurd thoughts. So I decided to utilize a practice called Tonglen, where one breathes in negativity and breathes out positivity. I began to breathe in my negativity. Sometimes with Tonglen, it's difficult. I was so full of negativity, that's all I could do. It was really pretty simple. And then consciously breathe out equanimity, safety, and good health to all. I did that until the bell rang. After we were finished, I went back to Facebook and saw her answer. Got it. I was so caught up with my righteous anger and my time spent occupied in a non-existent fight that I was somehow disappointed that she did not leave me anything else to be mad about. Tricked again by my own mind. So what can I learn from this? Maybe I can trust my vow after all. And even if she had a different answer, maybe I still could have trusted my vow. Maybe my vow includes being angry with myself, using my sitting time with my emotions, and using that time to defuse or accept emotions for what they were. And in a case in case you were wondering, several days later, she posted another meme with scientifically false information. So why did I bring this up? Because it was a Dharma gate. We don't choose Dharma gates. We surrender to the Dharma in whatever way it meets us. Every situation, every moment, every breath is a Dharma gate. Everything is an invitation to enter. Now, fully. We have entered them with the first breath we take, and we'll continue entering them with our last. And finally, we get to Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. The vow to follow the three treasures, the four noble truths, the noble eightfold path. We have the guidelines, we have instructions, we have a wisdom. We get it wrong, we climb back on the path, or honestly, more accurately, the path itself includes us falling off. The path itself includes dead ends, not seeing the signpost, having rain and hail on us, having our memories of all these things overcome us. The path itself has everything we need in addition. Every experience, every ability, every sense is already there. Nothing is lacking. We practice with our entire being, which is why we say, Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. We are it. We practice with our way of becoming it. We are Buddha. And with our vow, we have continued to become it. So with gratitude, I thank you for listening to me today. And sorry the Wi-Fi didn't help us out.
Alan, thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, once we got the picture gone, the sound was great. And so we were able to hear you well. Thank you so much for that very inspiring talk. A lot to digest. So as we close, let's sit together for a minute or two and we'll dedicate the merit of our time. May the merit of our practice here together and our listening to the Dharma be for the benefit of each and every one of us. And may that benefit spread to all beings, everywhere in every realm. May all beings be safe and free from danger and harm. And may all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy in body and in mind, and may all beings live with ease and well-being, and ultimately, may all of us and all beings everywhere be free.